With the 13th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. For those unfortunate viewers out there, we are now in the video version as well. Chris McPherson alongside Fran Duffy. And Fran, it's been a little while. Spent the last couple weeks on the road going to St. Pete for the Shrine Game. Last week in Mobile, Alabama, checking out the top senior draft prospects at the Senior Bowl. A lot of great content for both you and Alex Smith and all the guys. Brian Thomas, our producer behind the scenes. Ray Doyle, everyone else who helped out from the production standpoint. But it's time to get things back going here at the NovaCare Complex. I'm back in the South now. Start getting acclimated to the process here. We have a great show for you today. We have Jimmy Kemsky from PhillyVoice.com who did an Eagles-only mock draft. 9 players, rounds 1 through 7. We're going to go through pick by pick and have him explain his reasoning for each of those selections. We're going to start off, of course, with our draft buzz and our good friend Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net. Drop some bombs exclusively on PhiladelphiaEagles.com in a weekly column that you'll see each and every Monday leading up to the draft. Our pick 6, who made some money the last couple weeks? The best players or the players who improved their stock the most from the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Game. We're going to have your questions in our draft mailbag. Our on the clock, our game for this week is going to be a crystal ball. I'm going to ask Fran to look into the future. I'm going to offer some statements. Will they be true or not?
Going in fresh. I haven't even looked at the sheet.
Nothing whatsoever.
This will be interesting.
And the unofficial visit is Navy's Keenan Reynolds. The quarterback turned running back who turned some heads and might be one of those players we mentioned in pick 6 who helped his stock.
Potential slot receiver. Mike Mayock said he could potentially be a receiver. Ooh. Julian Edelman.
The Julian 2.0. Edelman type, yes.
Yes. So yes. It'll be interesting to watch.
Can definitely see the comparisons there. So, again, thank you very much for your support. And whether you're watching on video, listening on audio, no matter where you consume the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA or any of our other podcasts, make sure to rate and comment and let us know what you want to see moving forward, what we can do better. It's all about you, the fans out there, whether you're Eagles fans, Draft Knicks, just wanted to get a little more inside info. We're here for you guys. So, as we do always, let's kick things off with Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, to start things off on Draft Buzz, we're going to delve into Tony Pauline's column that he wrote for PhiladelphiaEagles.com on Monday, his Draft Buzz column. And we'll obviously touch on a couple of things outside of that, but so many great nuggets.
Yeah.
And we'll start off with Carson Wentz, the big story from the Senior Bowl. Can the North Dakota State prospect hang with the big boys? Can he show up in front of the NFL decision makers and top scouts? And it certainly looked like he was up to the task. In fact, he was impressive in team meetings. He impressed the decision makers with his knowledge of the X's and O's. Bottom line is, it looks like that there will be 2 quarterbacks going in the top 5 of this year's draft class, because Pauline said that not only will Wentz go in the top 5, Jared Goff from Cal, underclassman, was not at the Senior Bowl.
Sure.
You'll get to see him at the Combine, where he will, quote-unquote, throw the hell out of the ball, according to one of his sources. But Wentz stepping up big time, showing that he belongs in the NFL. Even Eagles head coach Doug Peterson saying that this is a kid who could play at the next level.
Yeah, I mean, you check all the boxes with Carson Wentz in terms of his performance at the Senior Bowl. He showed the arm strength. Check it off. Showed the arm strength, showed the accuracy, showed the mobility. Obviously, all the off-field questions, Tony Pauline says that he answered. I had heard that he was going to be good at the chalkboard with teams, so obviously was able to impress in that facet of the game as well. Certainly was the best quarterback down in Mobile.
All right, so we'll stay on the quarterbacks. That's always the juiciest topic. Those are the players the fans know the most about. And one with the semi-local ties, Penn State quarterback Christian Hackenberg, will not fall out of the top 75 picks this year's draft, according to Tony Pauline, even coming off of back-to-back struggling seasons, struggling performances, so to speak, there in State College.
Yeah, and it's something that, look, I'm a big fan of Tony Pauline, but also of Christian Hackenberg, because he's got potential that not a lot of these quarterbacks have. I mean, he's got a strong arm. He shows the accuracy from within the pocket. He works with bodies around him. Now, there are times, sure, he does not work well with bodies around him. I was there at the Temple game, C-Mac, where I felt like he got sacked 13, 14 times, and he looked shell-shocked. That was in August. That was week one. So seeing him in that phase, that early in the season was a little bit scary. But as you continue to watch more, you start to see more of those pro-style throws. He worked in a system where it was not the best fit for him. Personnel was not great. I think a lot of teams are going to look at him and say, you know, we can polish that. We can refine that. Very, very exciting. It is a little dangerous.
It's always dangerous because it's a little tempting. That fruit looks so good.
I know. But you can count me on his bandwagon, because I'm going to be lonely. I'm going to be like the... the string band going down with the ship of Titanic. Like, that's going to be me with Christian Hackenberg. I mean, I'm a big fan.
You're going to leave a space on the raft?
Yeah. I'm going to leave space.
For Hackenberg, you won't push him off?
If you want to jump in, you can jump
in. Like, poor Leo DiCaprio get pushed off by Kate Winslet?
Yeah, I mean,
Hack, you can stay on Hack.
I got room for you.
Never let go. I'm never letting go of Christian Hackenberg. But obviously has all the ability in the world. It's the case. And that's why I was interested to see the report from Tony, and talked to Adam Kaplan from ESPN. Same deal, was that he had heard from people around the league. People were very, very high on Christian Hackenberg. So it'll be interesting to watch.
I'm waiting for a Kaplanism to be dropped in there. So
we've already dropped too much now so far.
Exactly. No love, however, for another Big Ten quarterback, Connor Cook, who elected not to go to the Senior Bowl. Now, I know you had touched on this with Alex Smith on an earlier edition of the Journey to Draft podcast down in Mobile, Alabama. Phil Savage, the executive director of the Senior Bowl, he's been known to out some players in the past for players who didn't handle the decision-making process when it comes to attending the game or not properly, guys who might drop out at the very last second, don't give a good reason. He'll tell the evaluators who are in Mobile, you need to find out more about this guy. Why did he drop out? Was Connor Cook in that category? Did he out him? Or is it just the fact that teams are going to wonder why Connor Cook just simply decided not to show up?
I think the agents and the prospects, after what happened last year and so many guys put on blast by Phil Savage in that weigh-in, pumped the brakes a little bit and really handled their business and how they rejected the offer. It was an all-time low in terms of prospects that said no to the Senior Bowl this year. Only 16 players, for one reason or another, decided not to go, and only three of them were non-injury related, and Connor Cook was one of them. So apparently he handled his business correctly, respectfully told them in a timeful manner that he was not going to make it down there to Mobile. It's a shame he didn't go, because he would have had a chance to prove himself alongside Carson Wentz that he belongs to the top of the quarterback discussion. Obviously, that'll have to wait until the combine, so we'll wait to Indianapolis.
The question is going to be for NFL teams is, obviously he has some talent.
Yep.
The thing is, he was not voted a captain, which you almost assume is going to be the quarterback in most instances, unless you just have an unbelievable personality.
Especially a three-year starter quarterback. Yeah. Not even like, it's his first year. No, I mean, a three-year starter quarterback, and he wasn't named a captain. That's going to be something that's going to raise a lot of eyebrows.
And Tony Pauline said he was getting a lot of flack from Spartans fans. I wonder if Ike Reese was one of them, because of the fact that he put out there that teammates haven't spoke highly of the quarterback. So how dare you badmouth our guy? Well, that's going to be one of the questions that Cook will have to answer during those interviews at the combine.
Yeah, and it'll be very interesting to watch how that narrative, the ebbs and flows of how that story with Connor Cook starts to progress as the draft process wears on.
All right, so we'll get off the quarterbacks for a second here. How about Nick Vinette, one of the big winners at the Senior Bowl? Could he be the first tight end off the board in this draft class? I know Hunter Henry from Arkansas, another noble name. Many people think that maybe he's a more talented prospect, but Vinette, at this point, more polished in terms of the blocking aspect? Do you think that would be the difference?
I think both still have a little bit of improvement there, but I think Vinette's probably a little bit further along. I like the Ryan Malik kid. He was down at the Shrine game. He wasn't even at the Senior Bowl. I like Ryan Malik as well. The law firm Henry Krieger Coble from Iowa as well, I think, has some ability. He's a little bit smaller, but I think it's an interesting tight end class. We have talked all season about how the tight ends and the corners in this draft were going to be heavily dependent on which juniors declared. And there were a lot of talented juniors that went back. O.J. Howard from Alabama, the Clemson kid, Leggett. I mean, Engram from Ole Miss. A lot of those talented underclassmen tight ends went back to school. So you see Hunter Henry from Arkansas. You see David Greenidge from NC State. Austin Hooper from Stanford. Now we'll see how they mix in with the senior class.
All right, a position that could be a question mark for the Eagles, depending on what happens with Walter Thurman, safety. Obviously, you have a Pro Bowler in Malcolm Jenkins, who will be the starter alongside him in 2016. That remains to be seen, but one possible prospect could be Boise State's Darian Thompson, who, according to Tony Pauline, has been graded as a late first rounder. This is by a team that apparently is not in the market for a safety, but nonetheless, you know, there are some teams who are pretty high on Darian Thompson.
Yeah, I'm not quite there yet. I think there's still some areas that need to improve. Obviously, his production on the ball was very, very good, especially as a junior in 2014. Had a load of interceptions and was very, very productive. The question will be, coming downhill, how will he do? He was a guy that didn't back down from competition this past week. He was obviously coming from a mid-major school, going up against some talented wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs out of the backfield from bigger schools, did not back down in those one-on-one practice sessions this week at the Senior Bowl. So an intriguing player. I think the safety class overall is pretty intriguing because there's a wide variety of skill sets. Thompson is definitely one of those back-end free safety type players.
All right, so a little mock draft stuff to wet your whistle a little bit here. So it's definitely that time of year. Well, the thing is, it starts earlier and earlier every year, but now it's really getting into full swing. We're gonna pull this one from CBS Sports. Rob Rang and Dane Brugler did a dual mock draft, and at number 13, BT, do we have a drum roll that we can do a video version? You know,
no,
like a
little, no drum roll. I can give it to you.
Exactly.
Right,
they go D lineman A. Sean Robinson, a defensive lineman.
Yeah.
Number 13 from Alabama.
Well, so here's the thing with Robinson. It's the question of the debate of talent versus skill. And I think that he's got loads of talent. I mean, he's got great size. He's 315 pounds. He's 6'5". You know what he can be against the run. He's so strong at the point of attack. And he's got the athleticism to be really, really disruptive. He's just not there with his hands yet as far as getting after the passer. His sack production was really low, and not just the production, just in terms of attacking offensive tackles. I think he's got a lot of room to improve, but his upside is very, very high. I think I saw someone from NFL Network has him ranked as the top defensive lineman in the class, ahead of DeForest Buckner from Oregon. I think that he's got that kind of potential. He'll be an interesting guy, and I think that he could be a fit for a one-gap or two-gap scheme. I think the Eagles and Jim Schwartz and this new scheme coming into Philadelphia, he would be a fit there. I would be a little surprised to see them go D-tackle in round one.
Well, you never know.
You never know. You want the most talented players, and he very well could be right there at 13th overall.
It's funny because when you were saying it's a matter of talent versus need, I thought you were going to go with talent versus need from the team standpoint.
Sure, right.
Obviously, because you could say, look, the Eagles' defensive line, arguably the most talented unit.
Yep.
Now, obviously, they're going to have to look at it overall and see what changes they might want to make based on a new scheme, because you are drafting guys for the 2-gap, 3-4 mold the last couple seasons. How will that change with this attacking 4-3 scheme? Nonetheless, A'shaun Robinson would be a nice fit, but is it too much of a luxury there at 13 when you have other holes that you need to address?
That would be the question, and we saw Jim Schwartz do it in Detroit. I mean, he had Ndamukong Suh already. What did he do? He went out and he drafted Nick Fairley in the top 10. Now, Robinson, like I said, I mean, he's a really intriguing talent, and big guys like that. The other thing, too, with him, he's got a high motor. I mean, he's running 30 yards downfield, making tackles with running backs down the field. I watched him against LSU. There was a play where the quarterback rolled left. He matched him step for step. Turned around, went back right. Robinson matched him step for step, going the other way. He threw the ball to a tight end the other side of the field. He put his foot in the ground, retraced his steps, and made the tackle 8 yards. I mean, a really ridiculously athletic play for a 315-pound human being. Robinson is really, really intriguing.
All right, Fran, so how about another look at a mock draft? Not just any mock draft, but an Eagles 9-pick mock draft done by Jimmy Kempsky from PhillyVoice.com. He is this week's Mr. Relevant.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
For this week's Mr. Relevant on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA, we bring in none other than Philly Voice's Jimmy Kempsky, who was crazy enough this early in the process to not only do an Eagles-only mock draft, but his second version of it. He's already done two versions of an entire 9-pick draft for the Eagles using only their picks. So, Jimmy, you have there's something more important we need to get into.
Yeah, I think so.
Apparently, there were some hijinks that happened down in Mobile, Alabama during the Senior Bowl. So before we get into the important stuff, we got to get this out of the way here. Jimmy, from your estimation, from your recollection, what happened at the Senior Bowl?
You're talking about the garage gate?
Yeah, yes, correct, the garage gate.
Yeah. So I stayed at the Holiday Inn down there, and across the street from the Holiday Inn is parking garage. And I just walk up to the parking garage. The gate is out of sight, out of mind, because there's a car sitting at the gate paying or doing whatever he's doing, but the gate was up. So the car finished doing what he was doing, and it pulled out. And I just, you know, having nothing in front of me, continued to walk through into the parking garage to go get my car. And out of nowhere, just bang, parking garage gate just comes down squarely on my forehead and opened up a couple cuts. And it's like as soon as it happened, it was really just surprise and confusion more than pain. I was just trying to assess what had just happened to me. And then I was able to diagnose that I was hit in the face with a metal parking gate garage. And it kind of hurt. So I go up to my car, and you know, I'm looking for stuff in my car, like some kind of napkin or you know, whatever I can find so that I can put on my forehead. That's, you know, I wouldn't say it's gushing blood, but you know, it's coming out. So sure enough, Fran and Alex Smith come up, and they're parked like two spots away. And I say, do you guys have any napkins with my head, you know, full of blood?
Got blood flowing down his forehead.
And Fran's just like, yeah, whatever, we got to go to practice.
I had no idea.
Are you serious? He is, Fran is so in the zone.
I mean, I didn't say that so much, but he was just totally just like, he was in his zone, and he was locked in on the prospect that he was about to watch and was just really concerned about getting in the car and getting to Loud People Stadium.
It wasn't until this at the afternoon where Alex said, Friend, yeah, Jimmy was bleeding in our car. You didn't even know. You just ignored it. And you put the car in reverse and you almost backed over him. Like, you were ready to go.
That's draft dedication right there is what you call that.
I'm sorry. I mean, you know, in retrospect, I apologize, Jimmy.
All good. Nope, no worries at all.
Fran said, which reporter can we get out of the way? Just knock him off one by one. Oh, he's already bleeding head. Boom, just run him over and then we can move on here. So, I don't know how to segue from that into your mock draft here, so maybe you have a clearer mind after getting banged in the head down there in Mobile. But your first pick here, Paxton Lynch. Now, I'm not going to ask you to go through your dissertation on Sam Bradford, what the Eagles can or can't do there. It's documented on PhillyVoice.com pretty thoroughly. I think you said it's over 2,200 words to be exact. But nonetheless, we're going in with the premise that the Eagles are going to need to get their quarterback here, and you think that they can get him at number 13. Why do you think that one of the big three, assuming that Jared Goff and Carson Wentz are going to be the other two quarterbacks involved here, why do you think Lynch might be able to slide to 13 for the Eagles?
I don't know. It's February 2nd, and you know, this time last year, you're looking at guys like, you know, Teddy Bridgewater, who were, you know, people had in the top 10, and you know, you have other guys that you know, are going to rise and fall throughout the process. Really, not even rise and fall. It's the NFL people already kind of have their evaluations, you know, pretty set on these guys. It's just about the media kind of catching up to what they're thinking. So, you know, who knows, like, how far, you know, especially quarterbacks are going to, you know, kind of go up and down the board, the quote-unquote boards, the media version of the boards. So, you know, by the time the end of April rolls around, it could be a totally different spot. But, you know, up to three, it seems like he kind of has the shine taken off him a little bit. He lost three straight games at the end of the season to Temple, Houston, and Navy. And then he had a really bad bowl game performance against Auburn. So I think people kind of have soured on him a little bit. But what I see there is a really, really good player. He's mobile. He's got a really strong arm. He's big at 6'6". You can see over that offensive line. You can see over the defensive line. And really, I think he can just make all the throws. And he kind of has you know, a lot of upside at that position. Maybe needs a little bit of refinement, but from the Eagles' perspective, you have a bunch of coaches that were former quarterback coaches, so I think it'd be a good fit for him. Maybe find a bridge quarterback to play for year one or so, and then when Lynch is ready, you put him in there. And this is, of course, assuming you know that they do move on from Sam Bradford.
Jimmy, you were down at the Senior Bowl. You got a chance to see Carson Wentz in person. A lot of people very, very impressed with the kid from North Dakota State. What did you see from him, and do you think at this point it's a foregone conclusion he's going top five?
Yeah, I think he's really good. And the word that I kind of used to describe him that week was everything just kind of looked effortless. Like, it just looked easy to him, the way he was making sideline throws, you know, 15, 20-yard out throws. It just looked easy for me. He showed off the strong arm. You really see the difference when they were going through reps, and he'd throw a pass, and then you know, the next guy up would be a guy like Cody Kessler. You can see the enormous difference in the zip that they both have on the ball. And I thought he was really impressive. We didn't get to see his entire skill set there. I mean, like we mentioned with Paxton Lynch, Wentz is another guy who can run. I mean, he can do things in terms of getting out of the pocket and escaping pressure and getting yards down the field as with his legs. So we didn't get to see all that, but just in terms of his arm strength and just kind of looking the part down there, I was impressed with what I saw. And I think top five, sure, I could see that happening, but I think for sure he's solidified his spot in the top 10.
All right, so we'll go from the first round to the third round, the first of two third-round picks for the Eagles. And another, I won't say surprise, because I'm sure that depending on Sam Bradford, what happens there, Eagles fans could see a quarterback at number 13. But to start off the third round, you have Louisiana Tech running back Kenneth Dixon, a fan favorite of one Fran Duffy.
That's true.
Should call a Fran favorite at
a
this
Fran
point.
Favorite.
A Fran
it's,
favorite
yep.
in the process here. But the reasoning was quite intriguing because you figure DeMarco Murray will definitely be back, but the Eagles are going to need to look to the future of the position, so to speak, in your estimation. Tell us more about Ken Dixon and why you think he could be a possibility for the Eagles here in the third round.
Yeah, and that's the pick that got the most, I wouldn't say hatred, but people are like, oh, they're not going to take a running back that early. And I think it's kind of a sneaky, underrated need. Because, you mentioned DeMarco Murray, who's going to be back with the team. It's going to cost far more to cut him than it is to keep him. He's not going anywhere, and there's no reason to get rid of him. So he's going to be back in 2016. 2017, if he doesn't have some kind of, massive comeback season in 2016, then he's probably going to be gone before the 2017 offseason kind of gets underway there. So you have to have somebody in place. You have Darren Sproles, who's getting older. He's 33 years old, I believe. You have Ryan Matthews, who, when healthy, is really good, but is rarely fully healthy. So, that's the guy who, maybe if you draft a running back, you can get something for him in a trade for a team that's looking to bolster their running game. But I think they kind of have to get a guy in now, get him ready, because I think the perception is that rookies can come in and play really well from day one. And sure, you have David Johnson this year who did that. You have Todd Gurley who did that. But that's not really the norm. So I think if you get a running back in there this year, he can really be ready to go in 2017 when it's going to be a much greater need.
Well, Fran, why are you such a big fan? Kenneth Dixon,
I love Kenneth Dixon because he's probably, to me, he's one of the most competitive runners in the entire draft class. He's got the ability to be a feature back at the next level because he's got the ability to make you miss as a ball carrier, both with wiggle and with power, run through arm tackles. He's a great third down back, catches the ball really well out of the backfield. I'm a big fan of Kenneth Dixon. He's got good vision inside. He's got good vision on the outside in open space. I like Dixon a lot.
So, Jimmy, I respect your...
There's one more point on Dixon. Defenders at the Senior Bowl had zero, like safeties and linebackers, had no chance covering Kenneth Dixon there all week. And, he's a guy that kind of, in a way, his game isn't perfectly near a guy like Jamaal Charles in Kansas City, but certainly from a pass-catching perspective and being able to do things with the ball after he has the ball in his hands in the passing game, I think that's a guy that maybe could appeal to Doug Peterson.
So that's a fun exercise here, because I think you were really on to the type of guys, the type of players who Chip Kelly liked by this point in the draft process. Now everyone's back to square one and saying, well, who exactly is going to be a Doug Peterson guy, a Frank Reich guy, a Jim Schwartz guy for the defensive side of the football? It's a big guessing game, so to speak, in terms of what types of players are they going to want for the offense and the defense moving forward. So it's going to be interesting to see if little clues like that, like pass-catching ability of a running back, might be something the Eagles want. Now, Jimmy, I have a lot of respect for your football acumen, so no surprise you go offensive line with your next two picks here. Josh Garnett, the guard out of Stanford, and then in the fourth round, you go LaRaven Clark out of Texas Tech, a physical marvel, 6'6", long arms. Just talk about the importance of addressing the offensive line. We all know that Lane Johnson got his contract extension. That's out of the way. But certainly they need to infuse some youth because they haven't used a draft pick along the offensive line since they selected Johnson, number 4 overall, back in 2013.
Yeah, and they're the only team in the NFL that hasn't taken an offensive lineman in the last 2 years. And over the last 3 years even, they've only taken the one. And as you mentioned, Lane Johnson, during that span, the average number of offensive linemen taken by an NFL team, I think it was 4.25. So, the Eagles really kind of let that offensive line go. They got old. They're the oldest offensive line in the league, you know, heading into this season. And that was before they cut Evan Mathis and Todd Hermans. And then even after that, they're like two or three in terms of age on the offensive line. So they kind of came into the season with, you know, and a very, they came into the season with question marks, is the kind way to put it, at you know, both guard spots. And then you have Peters on the outside at left tackle, who, in my opinion, is, you know, kind of going through a decline. And he did battle through some injuries in 2015. There was a report that he took himself out of the game. That was really never that was really never confirmed or anything like that. But there are that, you know, there are those concerns that he's going to continue his decline. So you just have to really fill up the offensive line, both in terms of starters and in terms of depth behind them. So they really got to load up on offensive line talent. I actually have three of them in that draft. I think I had three in the first version too, and I'll probably have two or three in everyone going forward. But yeah, Raven Clark is a guy, like you mentioned, has 36 plus inch arms, is really athletic, and you know, they're gonna have to work with any team that he lands with. They're really gonna have to work with him. He played in that Texas Tech spread offense, didn't really do a lot of the things that NFL teams are gonna ask of him. So if they are gonna keep Jason Peters in 2016, as Doug Peterson has said, he's a guy that can kind of sit and learn behind that. And then maybe in 2017 or 2018, he'd be ready to go at one of the tackle spots.
Jimmy, what I like is that you really double-dipped in a number of different spots. You know, you look at the eight picks that you have with the Eagles so far in your mock draft, five Senior Bowl players, which obviously is an interesting trend to follow, three offensive linemen, two quarterbacks. You had Lynch at 13, and then in the fifth round, you have Cardale Jones from Ohio State. What is it about Jones that really attracts you to him in terms of a potential Eagle?
I like, if they're going to move on from Sam Bradford and they're going to take quarterback early, I like the idea of taking two, kind of like the Redskins did when they drafted RG3 and Kirk Cousins. That way you kind of have two guys that can kind of be groomed and developed simultaneously. Those guys can kind of challenge each other and have competition. In Cardale Jones, you have a guy that is, you know, what, 6'6", 250. He's a load. He can run. He's got a really powerful arm. And in that way, he's kind of similar to Paxton Lynch. Now, Paxton Lynch is a big guy who can run. Got a good arm, and both of them kind of need a little bit of refinement. So as long as you're going to develop one guy, you may as well develop two. And with those two guys having very similar skill sets, it just kind of made sense for me in that spot.
It's going to be interesting because fans are going to be more familiar with Cardale Jones.
Yeah.
So if he gets selected, even if they select Paxton Lynch at number 13, fans are going to be like, when's Cardale Jones becoming the starter? How quickly before he gets into the lineup? Because he has that cannon of an arm. He led the Buckeyes to the national championship, that amazing three-game stretch that he had to carry them to the title. So there's going to be more sizzle with that pick, I feel, even if you draft Lynch at number 13.
Sure, yeah, and we all know what Cardale Jones can do with the football in his hands. I mean, obviously, an electric ball carry because of his size and because of his athleticism downhill, his ability to make defenders miss in the open field. I mean, he's a hell of an athlete. He's an interesting player to watch.
All right, so in the fifth round, you hit the defensive line with Javon Hargrave, the defensive tackle out of South Carolina State. This is a very, very strong group of defensive linemen overall. And, of course, there are a lot of reports about the Eagles trying to work out deals with Vinny Curry and Fletcher Cox. You know, Cedric Thorne's about to become a free agent in March. So it wouldn't be a surprise that even though the Eagles' defensive line is strong, they would still try to address it with one of these mid- to late-round picks.
Yeah. Remember the old days when they'd have good talent along that defensive line and they'd just keep loading up anyway? I think, you know, we may see that again. And the guy that I had in the fifth round was Javon Hargrave, who Fran would know this better than I. Fran, you were at the Shrine Game week of practices, right?
I was, and he was one of the best players down there from day one on. And then I thought, honestly, Jimmy, last week at the Senior Bowl, I thought he fared well in the one day of practice too.
Yeah, he had a white helmet on. Like he was a late ad, so they weren't able to ship his helmet in time. So he just had this, you know, generic white helmet. I was like, who's that guy? And he impressed me as well. I looked at you know, some of his games, and he reminded me a little bit of, and to preface this, is a different other side of the ball, but Amini Sioutolu, who got drafted as a guard by the Carolina Panthers. I remember watching, you know, film of him back before he got drafted, and it was like he was like a 25-year-old man playing Pop Warner, like he was blocking guys. It almost looked like when Christian, it's like you play with Christian Okoye in Tecmo Bowl, like you'd run over, like you'd run, and defenders just be flying off of him, and because he played at a, you know, much lower level of football, and you know, and so he reminded me in that regard, because nobody could block them. I mean, you'd have like these tomato cans at guard and at these smaller schools, and Hargrave would just do, you know, basically whatever he wanted with them. So he's going to have a big transition going from that level, you know, directly to the NFL. But I really did like what I see of him there. He's, you know, a bigger guy. He's 6'1", which is short, but he's, you know, 315 pounds or so. I think he can be, you know, one of those one-gap penetrating defensive linemen that Jim Schwartz is going to covet.
Jimmy, you went with another small school player with your next pick, and that was James Bradbury, the corner from Samford University. We saw him this past week at the Senior Bowl.
Samford University.
We saw him down at the Senior Bowl. Also 6'1", obviously has good size for the cornerback position. What did you see from Bradbury that last week?
Yeah, he was physical. He actually didn't stand out too much to me in either in a good way or a bad way. The reason I had him in there is because there was a report that the Eagles had talked with him for about an hour, and that was, you know, Doug Peterson, I believe it was Howie was there, and somebody else. I don't think Jim Schwartz was in there, but the report was that they really sat down with him and talked to him for a long time. And in terms of, like, you know, C-Mac mentioned a minute ago, it's all guessing game now on what they're gonna you know, value at each positional group. And by my logic, you know, if we're gonna buy that Jim Schwartz is gonna kind of tailor his defense to the personnel that they already have in place. Now, obviously, they have Byron Maxwell and they have Eric Rowe at the starting cornerback spots, and both of those guys are long, you know, athletic guys that can, you know, use their length to get up and press receivers at the line of scrimmage. So, you know, I wonder if we're buying that Jim Schwartz is going to, you know, you know play to the strengths of the guys on their defense, then they'll kind of play the strength of Rowe and Maxwell, and if they're going to play the strength of those two guys, then, you know, maybe we're taking another leap and saying they're just going to continue to target those guys in the draft. And I think that's kind of what James Bradbury gives you.
All right, we're going to the seventh round here, and I'll let you just touch on both of these guys here. You go offensive line and defensive line. First, Isaac Samuolo, the versatile center guard from Oregon State, and then you round out the draft with Quinton Jefferson, the defensive tackle out of Maryland, who you explained in your story, Jimmy, has a very intriguing backstory that's unique to most draft prospects.
Yeah, he's got three kids, and he's married. So he has a lot more responsibility, and or is used to having more responsibility than, you know, most of these other kids coming out of college. And I think it was Tony Pauline, who is a regular guest of yours, if I'm correct. He tweeted that Jefferson had, you know, he was really impressing teams when he's had interviews with him. So yeah, he was a guy that stood out to me in some ways during the week of practices. He got some penetration. Again, he's a little bit of a smaller guy. I mean, he's 6'4", which is okay height, but he's, you know, he's right around 285, I believe. So maybe you bulk him up a little bit and you put him in on the interior of the defensive line. Maybe he can play some DN for you as well, have some positional versatility there. But he's a guy, you know, in the seventh round, just to add a depth to that defensive line.
Your thoughts, Frank?
Yeah, and Jefferson's an intriguing guy. Again, you mentioned three kids, married his high school sweetheart in college, and has that positional versatility, played some DN, played some D-tackle at Maryland, so definitely an intriguing player, and we know that Jim Schwartz likes that length on the defensive line. So.
How about Samuolo? He's someone you've talked about in the past on the podcast.
Yeah, he's an underclassman. He's played some guard, played some center. I know he was pretty highly regarded coming into the year. I haven't watched him yet this season, but definitely is another guy that offers that positional versatility and play a number of different spots.
Jimmy Kemsky.
That Peterson had mentioned. I mean, we had asked Peterson, you know, what he was going to value in his offensive lineman, and that was the thing that he said first and foremost was, you know, positional versatility, because you don't know, you know, at some point during the season, you're going to have some offensive linemen go down, so you want guys that can play a number of spots. Samuolo, of course, is a guy who, like Fred mentioned, has played a number of positions. He's actually played all five positions at Oregon State, and, you know, I think he's a guy that can come in. And like Trey mentioned, he was maybe a little more highly thought of. He did suffer a pretty serious injury, so I think that's why people kind of have him rated around the 6th, 7th, and maybe even undrafted free agent area. I was surprised to kind of see him there sort of universally, but as long as he's there, then I figured that would be a good spot for him in my you know, dumb little mock draft.
It's almost like the honorable mention section. Who could you get at the end there? Jimmy, in the quest for clicks, did an amazing job putting together a 9-player, Eagles-only mock draft version 2, which you can check out in detail on phillyvoice.com. Jimmy Kemsky, thank you very much for joining us here on the Journey into the Draft podcast presented by AAA.
Appreciate it, guys.
Now it's time for Pick 6.
Really great stuff there from Jimmy, our Mr. Relevant, and I was really proud that his daughter, who was actually, you could hear a little bit in the background at times.
Not too bad.
But not too bad. Well-behaved, because I think she's actually the one making the picks when all is said and done. So that
it's
actually
all dartboards at this point.
It would actually be a pretty fun feature to have
it would.
Daddy versus daughter in terms of mock draft selection there.
Mocking the mock drafts.
Exactly.
There you go.
It's time for our pick six, so let's find out who made a little bit of money the last couple weeks at these All-Star Games, players who improved their draft stock the most, and I'll start off by taking the low-hanging fruit. Quarterback Carson Wentz,
sure.
Drop the mic, done deal. Everyone wanted to know, could he hang with the big boys? Can he play the big-time football? How would he look, you know, go from North Dakota State, an FCS program, to being with the Alabamas, the Ohio States, the Floridas, the Georgias, all the big-time college yep. football programs. Look, he showed up big time, was, as Tony Pauline said, impressive in the meetings with the teams from an individual standpoint. He had great stuff on the field. You know, overall, he showed that he is a first-round pick. Exactly how high does he go, we don't know, but he's definitely one of the legit quarterbacks in this year's draft class. Is he going to be a top-five pick? Probably, when all is said and done, those are the players whose stock rise the most. But the main thing was he passed the test the way he needed to. So I'll take the easy way out and say Carson Wentz, North Dakota State, earned some money at the Senior Bowl.
So Wentz was voted by NFL scouts and by the Senior Bowl personnel as the best quarterback in terms of the week of practice at the Senior Bowl. The best overall player? Wide receiver Braxton Miller from Ohio State. And Miller obviously was talked about. I know he was a favorite of Tony Pauline. Tony mentioned several times this week that he seemed like he was the president of the fan club for Braxton Miller. Obviously, he had a great week, and we knew what kind of athlete he was coming into the week. We knew what kind of athlete he was coming into the season, making the switch from quarterback to wide receiver. You remember that week one game on prime time against Virginia Tech, that six spin move in the open field, and he raced it and took the ball to the house. I think that he's got the ability to be a very good route runner, showed some things at the Senior Bowl and on tape this year that he could develop even more in that phase of the game, because he flashed the ability to be very, very good. And then also playing the ball in the air. I was very surprised this year and last week how well he was playing the ball in the air. A very natural athlete at going up and playing the football. I would say Miller really, really helped himself.
I flashed the deuces because Tony Pauline thinks he's a second-round pick.
He does.
When all is said and done.
I know,
so.
And he very well might be right. There was another report. Some people think he might go in the end of round one. It might be a little rich.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
All right, next up, I'll go a player we just talked about with Jimmy Kemsky, LaRaven Clark, the offensive tackle from Texas Tech, 6'5", 312 pounds. So looks the part physically, 36-inch arms. I mean, he's basically
ridiculous.
Pushing Fran all the way off the set here. The question is going to be, can he go to a team that's going to be patient and have the time to develop him, because he's coming from that spread option attack. You know, you're not going to see it at the pro level. It's pretty much the exact opposite of a pro-style offense, so he's going to need time to develop and learn the techniques here. But if you come here, you know, say to Philadelphia, you learn behind the legs of a Lane Johnson, a Jason Peters. Certainly, I think it's going to be that malleable ball of clay that
yeah.
you like to use, that
sure.
phrase. So I definitely think that from a physical standpoint, he's going to have evaluators and coaches drooling over the potential of what he could be at the next level. You look at Jason Peters, look, similar body frame.
Yeah.
I know Jason Peters is up to 330, 340 at this point in his career, but 6'5" as well. He was a tight end once upon a time. So
Clark definitely has the frame to put on 330 and carry it well.
Certainly. So I'll go LaRaven Clark as second player who made himself some money at the Senior Bowl.
The one guy I was also at the Senior Bowl that I was really a big fan of coming in, and he was the top safety in my rankings coming into the season. That's Jalen Mills, the corner down from LSU. He played corner this past week, played corner early in his career at LSU, played some slot, played some safety, played at the cornerback position all week last week. So he has that great positional versatility, was bought in and groomed behind Tyrann Mathieu early in his career. So he's got that ability to play a number of different roles for a defense. And the fact that he played the cornerback position at such a high level last week, I think really, really helped himself. And now we have a guy that has that safety corner versatility. Remember last year, you had Demarius Randall from Arizona State, who ended up going in the first round. Quentin Rollins, the corner from Miami, Ohio. Both guys went to the Packers. Randall was considered by many as a safety, and Rollins was considered by many as a corner. They both switched. Rollins played safety, and Randall played corner for much of the season. I think that you have a guy like Jalen Mills who can do similar type things for a football team.
All right, so my last person here, last player who I think made some money the last couple weeks, Now, Mike Mayock is on the record as saying that he thinks there could be 7 to 8 Ohio State players who go in the top 50 of this year's draft. Well, this player was once upon a time a Buckeye, so I don't know if Mayock is counting him or not, but it's a transfer who went to Eastern Kentucky, and that's edge rusher Noah Spence. Let me read you some of the stats here. He's 63 tackles, 22.5 tackles for loss, 11.5 sacks last season. A Harrisburg native, was unstoppable during the one-on-ones down at the Senior Bowl last week. Shorter arms, 31-inch arms, so that might be a little bit of a question. But if you're putting him on the edge, a 3-4 outside linebacker, and having him get after the quarterback, seems like he could do that pretty well at the next level. So any questions about him from that standpoint, I think, were answered last week in Mobile.
Yeah, and I think the thing that's most impressive about what Noah Spence can do is that coming into the year, my questions were he was kind of a one-trick pony as a pass rusher. If he would try to win on the outside, he had that one rip move, he'd win with a hand swipe and get on the outside, and if he didn't get that, play was over, he was done. He showed the ability to counter this past season, showed the ability to win multitude of ways, went speed to power, was able to win with inside counter moves. The fact that now he has a much wider repertoire of pass rush moves, I think will go a long way towards draft stock. And he had a great week last week, so no arguments from me there. The other guy, this will be the lone guy from the Shrine game, and that's Keenan Reynolds, the Swiss Army knife from Navy. Was a great quarterback for 3 years for the midshipman. Should have been a Heisman finalist this year. Should have been up for the running for the award, but obviously was not. Was held out in New York, but a very, very impressive athlete. Got to see him in person at the Shrine game. A little bit undersized, and that'll be an issue. I was worried about whether or not he was big enough to hold up at the running back position. But I'll tell you what, after seeing him catch the football in person, really almost effortlessly throughout the week of practice, Mike Mayock brought it up, potential slot receiver, mentioned it earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. Could he be that kind of offensive weapon for a football team and a creative offensive coordinator? You have a guy that can play in the slot, can run routes against linebackers, maybe get him against a safety. I think he's got that kind of athleticism. Keenan Reynolds, I think, helped himself in a big way 2 weeks ago at the Shrine game.
It's going to be interesting next week, Fran, when Alex Smith comes back on the podcast. Yep. We've got to fit a third man at this table.
We'll make it work.
He could sit on your lap or something like that. Well, Alex Smith, we miss him dearly on vacation this week after working so hard over the last two weeks, even though Fran decided to still come back for more. But nonetheless, Alex caught up with Keenan Reynolds at the Shrine game. Here is their one-on-one interview in the unofficial visit.
The unofficial visit.
I'm here with Keenan Reynolds from the U.S. Navy Academy. Keenan, obviously a highly illustrious career, but what's it like for you to be here with all these guys around these coaches here at the Shrine Game?
It's pretty awesome, you know, to play and compete with some of the best players in the country and then have some of the best coaches to ever coach at all on any level. You know, give you instruction, Hall of Famers give you instruction. I mean, it's truly a blessing. I'm trying to soak up as much as I can before I leave.
So you played in that triple option style offense at Navy. So what's the biggest challenge in the transition for you into kind of a more pro-style running back?
Just the terminology and then obviously the footwork. It's just little things. And, you know, just got to spend a lot of time focusing on those and privy to the details. And I think that'll help ease the transition.
What kind of feedback have you gotten from the coaches here? I know you've only been here for a few days, but what have they been telling you?
You know, just, again, focus on the little things, the footwork stuff, the play-action stuff, the chip-in, the pressing a line before you make a cut, just little things like that.
And I've seen you have taken some snaps at quarterback, kind of that read option style. Do you think that's something that you can translate into the next level, kind of an extra element to your game?
Absolutely. You know, fortunate to have opportunity to show versatility, catching the ball out of the backfield, running the ball, running some quarterbacks. So, you know, I just want to show that I can do all that. I can do anything that's asked of me and be successful at it.
My last question for you. When you first started playing football, did you think that you'd ever be in this situation with the possibility of playing in the NFL being so close?
You know, obviously anybody that plays, the dream is the NFL. And, you know, to actually be here and have the opportunity is truly a blessing. But, you know, we just got to keep working, got to keep grinding and see what happens.
On the clock.
Great stuff there from Alex and Keenan. Now it's time for a little on the clock. I will admit, I'm not the best to come up with the games. That's Alex Smith's forte.
It is.
So I tried my hand at it this week. And
I'm excited to see what you got.
So my game is called The Crystal Ball.
Okay.
I'm going to throw four statements at you. I want to keep it Senior Bowl themed, so they come off the Senior Bowl. So they're about Senior Bowl guys.
Okay.
And just statements about down the line, whether it's right after the draft, 6 months from now, end of next season, will these statements be true or not?
It's fun to always look back at these. So this will be good.
And maybe even down the line. I'll go down the line, especially this first one. You're not going to be able to really answer this one next season. Okay. But number one, we talked about Carson Wentz all during the podcast. Will he be the best quarterback out of this entire draft class?
You know, I think that right now you got to say yes, because he's the best all-around player at the position to me. You know, watching all of these top names, I would say he is the safest player of this whole group. And it's funny that you would say he's safe coming from the lower level of competition. But and we said earlier, you're just checking boxes with him. I think that he's got the ability to be the best player in this class at the position.
Number two. Okay. Here's the statement. How did Sean Oakman fall out of the first round of the draft? Is that something that we'll be saying or not?
I don't think it'll be something we're saying. You know, and we see that every year. We see guys, you know, how did Vontaze Burfict go undrafted? You know, how did Michael Johnson go, you know, fall late in the round? How did Greg Hardy fall in the draft? And there's always those physical freaks that, you know, come out. And he's certainly one of them, and he certainly looks the part, but he just doesn't always play to it. And he's a Philly native. Pretty sure he grew up an Eagles fan. It'll be interesting to see how he progresses throughout his career, because you want to root for him. It seems like, you know, obviously he had some off the field issues at Penn State that resulted in him ending up at Baylor. Mm-hmm. It seems like he turned the corner. I'll be very interested to follow his career.
Did have 2 sacks of Carson Wentz.
He did.
In the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
6'8", 269 pounds.
Crazy. It's a ridiculous frame. Ridiculous.
That's what everyone's chasing.
Yeah.
Or those abs, you know.
If you were to just take his 15 best plays and just put them all against the other 15 from some of the other best pass rushers in the league, in the draft class, you would say he belongs in that group, but you just don't see it often enough.
Next statement here on our crystal ball segment on the clock. Nick Martin will be a plug-and-play day one starter, just like his brother, Zach.
I was actually talking with Josh Norris about this. Josh thinks that our good friend from Roto World, we've had him on the podcast numerous times.
Okay.
Josh looked at all the centers that were at the Senior Bowl last week. He thinks every single one of them is a starter down the road. Every single one. My one question was Nick Martin. And I think he's a good player. And I got a chance to talk to him, and he seems like a great guy. Obviously, they love the bloodlines. He has an idea of what it takes to succeed at the NFL level. On the field, I just had a couple questions about him now. He's got that guard center versatility. I think that whole stick, the question will just be how effective of a starter will he be? I think that some of the other centers offer a little bit more. I love the Evan Bame kid from Mizzou. Yeah. I think Graham Glasgow from Michigan really, really helped himself. I almost put him in for my pick six in the last segment, you know, for those
been
2 weeks.
That would have been a good one.
He helped himself immensely. But I think Nick Martin is a solid player. I just don't know that he's going to be a day one plug and play, you're set for 10-year kind of starter.
Okay. Last one here. Jihad Ward, the defensive lineman.
Okay.
Philly native. Defensive rookie of the year.
Ooh. Defensive rookie of the year. You know, I think
strong defensive draft class, but he offers the positional versatility, could play end, could go inside if need be, can get after the quarterback.
I'm going to go with the field and just say no.
Okay.
As much as I love him, I'm a big, big fan of Jihad Ward. I did, and it's funny, I talked to him at the Senior Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
I asked him, I wanted to make sure before we brought him on camera, I said, hey, you know, before I ask you, like, you're an Eagles fan, right? He looked offended. He couldn't believe that we've talked to players in the past
really?
That had grown up in Philly and were not Eagles fans. So it was just funny. He starts guessing. He's like, oh, is Sharif Floyd not an Eagles fan? And he starts throwing names under the bus. I'm like, look, I don't remember exactly who it was. I remember that some guys we've talked to from the area were not. But
Sharif Floyd was an EYP top achiever.
Really?
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yep.
There you go. This comes full circle.
Exactly.
Now, Jihad Ward's a great player, and I've talked about him numerous times in this podcast, just his ability to win inside, outside. He can win with power. He can win with speed. He's another one of these guys like A'shaun Robinson that's got a ridiculously high motor for his size. I'm a big fan of his game.
Okay, so that's the on-the-clock segment, the crystal ball, a couple of statements I threw at Fran. He hadn't looked at him in advance, so I don't know how off guard I caught you there, but handled it pretty well.
Thank you.
All right,
it was good questions.
So I tried. So Alex, my apologies. All right, he'll be back next week to take over the ship. So we're going to finish things off in our draft mailbag, our questions from you, to round out the podcast.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, it's our last segment here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Your questions in our draft mailbag, and the first one comes from Neil Dutton, who goes by at ndutton13 on Twitter. Do you guys think the Eagles will spend a high pick on an offensive lineman? I certainly think that it's a possibility. I'm not going to sit here on February 2nd as we're recording this and say without a shadow of a doubt, because as Jimmy Kemsky kind of unveiled in his mock draft, you can see scenarios why things would change. But no question that there are going to be some players there in that 13 range. If you're a Taylor Decker fan, a Jack Conklin fan, a Cody Whitehair fan.
Ronnie Stanley, I wouldn't
Ronnie
rule him
Stanley,
out.
No, if he gets a 13. So certainly there are guys who could be in that range. And you still need to shore it up, whether short-term, you're talking about inside players, the guard positions, or long-term at the tackle spot.
Yeah, and I think that when you look at this offensive line group as a whole, what is one of the things I've talked about, you know, ad nauseum over the past 3 or 4 months? The depth. I think that especially inside and guard and center, I think there's really good depth in this draft class. And didn't Doug Peterson say last week at the Senior Bowl that he was impressed with his offensive line class overall?
Yes. Yeah. One of the three strongest positions, quarterback, secondary, and offensive line. Did not mention defensive line, which I thought was actually quite surprising.
That's interesting,
so, but three positions that the Eagles have some question marks.
Yeah.
Good address. So.
Yeah, and I'm a fan of the offensive line class overall. Again, maybe not, you know, five or six first round type talents, but a lot of talented players, a good depth in that group.
Okay. Next question comes from Jeff, who goes by, and I had to double check with you on this one.
Yes.
At Philly Freck 215.
Not
Philly
Freak.
Freak or something like that. Philly Freck 215. He'll have to let us know the story behind it. If Vernon Hargraves from Florida falls to number 13, does Howie pull the trigger because he's a Florida guy? And to me, I don't think it's because Howie Roseman's a Florida guy or anything like that. I think certainly the question is going to be, Vernon Hargraves isn't as big as the corners and the defensive backs that the Eagles have looked at in recent years. So that's one reason you might want to question him. But what does Jim Schwartz want? You know, obviously Corey Unlin, you bring him back from the last coaching staff. But schematically, what is Schwartz going to want? And typically, Schwartz has had bigger, longer corners. So I figure the guys like a Byron Maxwell and Eric Rowe, they would fit into that mold. Vernon Hargraves, I know you're not as high on him as some of the other defensive backs in this year's draft class. But at 13, you might be willing to pull the trigger. I think the size thing is going to be one of the question marks there.
That's the thing it'll be interesting to watch, is that I don't know that you can look at Vernon Hargreaves and say, yep, on this team and this scheme that we're going to presume that the Eagles would want to run. And Jimmy mentioned it earlier, was if you're going to look at the corners that are on this team right now and if you want to put them in best position to succeed and make the most out of their talent, you're going to want them up at the line of scrimmage and pressing. I don't know that you want Vernon Hargreaves doing that on a consistent basis. Now, the other thing to talk about, the Eagles could have a need at slot corner. You know, do you want Malcolm Jenkins being your slot corner and your free safety and base? Now, then that begs the question, do you want to draft a slot corner at 13th overall? That's another question. If you say it's a starter in the defense and all that, I mean, that's a valid question. I don't know that Hargreaves and Mackenzie Alexander, same thing from Clemson, I don't know that they're going to be top 15 picks. I just think that those smaller corners, I don't know that those small corners have been going as high. It doesn't mean that they're not good players. I mean, Jason Verrett from TCU a couple years back, he ended up, I think it was 30th overall or 31st overall.
He was
in that range.
Yeah, end of first round, but he was in Pro Bowl.
And he's turned a nice player for San Diego. Yeah. So it happens, but not a lot of those guys go high at this point.
All right, next question comes from Bid the Kid at JB1DD on Twitter. Since you've been covering the Senior Bowl, which juniors, which underclassmen should we start keeping our eyes on? Because now we transition to this part of it where...
Yeah, so I'm doing the same thing. Yeah. Any guys that underclassmen I haven't watched, now I'm spending time and I'm trying to catch up on so I can talk about them on this podcast. But talk about A'shaun Robinson, obviously, is a guy that I think a lot of people are going to continue to bring up with the Eagles, especially with the move to the 4-3. You know, will he be a fit in what Jim Schwartz wants to do up front? I think that... you look at a number of different positions. You know, if you look at the tight end spot, we've talked about that. The wide receiver position, you know, Laquon Treadwell, you know, what if he's there at 13? If you think that he is a dominant number one receiver type player, do you pull the trigger on Laquon Treadwell? I'm a big fan of Tyler Boyd from Pittsburgh as well. I don't know if he's going to go top 15. I think that he is that kind of a player. I think he's one of my favorite receivers in the draft.
Greg Lewis coached him at Pitt.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that. That's a good one. I like that. You know, I think there's a lot of talent at a number of different positions. The underclassmen, there was a huge number this year, 96 official underclassmen with 11 that were graduate underclassmen.
Yes.
So the number overall was 107 players that left their eligibility on the table for their college career, the highest number on record.
All right, the last question for our Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA Mailbag comes from Jesper Hagen, at Jesper Hagen on Twitter. Is there any possibility, this is a good one, this is a fun question, I like it.
This is a good one, I like where his head's at.
Is there any possibility the Eagles re-sign Sam Bradford and double down on the quarterback position and still draft one at number 13, which would be a shock to the system if it happens? Because if they re-sign Sam Bradford, the assumption is going to be they're not doing it in the draft. Now I'm not talking about franchise tag.
That would be the one caveat. If you franchise tag Sam Bradford.
No, to me, that leaves open the possibility because it's a one-year deal.
Right.
You say, okay, maybe Bradford is your stopgap guy for a year, and then you draft and develop a guy. The question, if you sign him for a five-year deal.
Right. And paying him the money that would go along with that, I don't know that you can do that.
I don't know if you can do it either.
I don't know if you can do it.
I think if you re-sign Sam Bradford to a long-term deal, you're hitching your wagon to him, and you're building the rest of the team around him to go win and to win as quickly as possible.
I would agree.
You know, this is a situation where, you know, if it was a three-year contract and maybe there's only a couple years, you can groom the guy. You can make more of an argument for it. Unless you're just so in love. If you think Paxton Lynch is like, you know, Aaron Rodgers, the next Aaron Rodgers, where I can sit him for a couple years, but he'll be my guy when the time comes, that's different. We don't know, obviously, what the Eagles, the brain trust, think of the quarterbacks at this point. But to me, I think if you're signing Bradford to a long-term deal, you want to build around him to win now.
Yeah, I would 100% agree.
That would be the shock.
That would be the only thing would be if it was a franchise tag situation, then do you work around it that way?
Now, it's really funny. An exercise that Max Rappaport, our writer on the site, and I did the other day, going back, we're working on a series that will start probably next week or so on the site called Draft Memories. And it's players recall in the draft process.
Okay.
So Jordan Matthews, we got his backstory, and he talked about the emotions. And I don't want to give too much away, but basically he thought going to the draft it was going to be the Eagles or the Panthers. Okay. And he actually shared a story where when you get to Radio City, because it was the last year of Radio City, they give you a number of where to line up on stage for the picture.
Okay.
Well, it was 22, which was the Eagles' pick. So he's thinking, this is meant to be. It's going to happen here. So when it didn't happen, he was like, when the Eagles trade back to 26, well, Jordan's like, well, I guess it's going to be the Panthers. But it's just sort of intriguing that I actually don't quite know where I'm going with the end of this story here.
It's just interesting to follow how some of these guys, I didn't know that some of these guys have an idea of it down to one or two teams, this is where I'm going to end up.
They probably just think about the fact that who's shown the most interest during the draft
process. And BT, help me if I'm wrong, didn't Brandon Graham have no idea that the Eagles were interested? I mean,
That's just
interesting that there's so many different levels of interest and what players think about where they could end up once the draft process finishes up.
Yeah, the point I guess to try and make is a surprise element that you just never know what's going to happen. But just going back and watching, we were actually watching the Eagles draft live telecast just to get all the reaction of what was going on during that time. At 22, you have Dave Spiro and Mel Reese, and you know, I think they were thinking it would be Marquise Lee, the receiver who went to Jacksonville. That name we heard a million times.
If you set the over-under at 145 and a half times mentioned Marquise Lee by Merrill, it would probably be over.
Over, exactly.
It was every 2 seconds.
But Spuds did chime in. He goes, I think you could see a team like Cleveland. I think he mentioned Cleveland by name, sneak back up to get Manziel. Okay? But then we get to 26, and nobody thought that Mark Smith would be the guy for the Eagles at that spot. You know, I think Marquise Lee was, again, it's got to be him at this point. They got to go with the receiver. And then to get that surprise element of what happens when it's the guy that you're not expecting there.
After the pick, every time Merrill will talk about it and say, when they said Mar for Marcus Smith, I thought he was going to be Marquise Lee.
He actually thought he was like, well, Goodell said it wrong. He called him Marcus Lee.
Oh, of course, and Marquise Lee hasn't exactly panned out yet with Jacksonville either.
So. No, but Allen Robinson
certainly
has. He's been a stud for them.
Absolutely.
Well, how did Goodell pronounce Mariota's name? He botched his name big time.
It was,
I, I don't recall.
Remember. Yeah, exactly.
I'll have to go back. I'll go back and listen to that after we finish things off here. So, again, thank you very much for watching, listening, however you consume your podcast. Again, make sure to rate and comment and let us know what you want to hear or see. Moving forward, again, each and every week, we will be bringing you the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. For Fran Duffy, I'm Chris McPherson. Somewhere in the hemisphere is Alex Smith. Brian Thomas behind the scenes, thank you very much for making this happen. We will be back next week.